You're listening to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral.
Hello and welcome to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral, with me, Steve Sidwell, and three-time Premier League winner, Joe Cole. Coley, how are you?
I'm very well.
What have you been up to?
Mate, Cyprus for the week.
Lovely.
Yeah, lovely.
Was it not sunny?
It was lovely, mate. I was doing my thing, lifeguard, boys were playing football all day.
Yeah,
lovely, lovely.
Nice
trip.
And chilled, nice and recharged. Lovely.
Yeah, recharged, ready to go. How you been?
Yeah, all good, busy. Yeah. So let's crack on with our guest. Talking about chilled and recharged, I'm sure our guest would not like you to have been chilled and recharged on the pitch when marking you, because join us today, we have got one quarter of the most famous back four in English history.
Wow.
He sits fourth in the list of Arsenal's all-time record appearance holders, a Gunners legend who won three FA Cups and a league title in three different generations. Ladies and gentlemen, you're right, it's not Martin Keown, it is Lee Dixon.
Oh, thank God I'm not Martin Keown.
There's not many people that want to be Martin Keown, is there?
Don't tell him that, he'd be after you.
He's always after me. He was like that when I was a youth team player. Dicko, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure,
lovely
thanks
to,
for having me.
Lovely to have you on. Look, let's start about the famous back four. Dixon, Winterburn, Bold, Adams. You've got to put Keown in there as well.
Absolutely.
That's a bit of a mute point, isn't it, Dicko?
Well, it is a bit.
He doesn't like that, Mark, does he? Like, when he gets... Because you go with Bold, didn't you? I don't know, it just rolls off the tongue. And obviously, Martin's just as good a player, but he always... Whenever I see him and that gets mentioned, his back comes up a little bit, doesn't he, old Martin?
But the thing is with that, it's the original. So, right. You know, if you've got something that's like the original Levi's or whatever it is, you always go back to that. And because, obviously, Steve was there from the start, and I never call it, obviously I don't call it the famous back four, it's just my mates and the back four, and Dave Seaman always gets the ump because he doesn't get a mention, so I always have to put him in, you know, our new goalie, it's one of them. But the original is Bold was always in there, but I mean, Martin played more games than Boldy in that position, you know, over the period of our careers, so he does get left out a little bit, but it's the original is there. I've got the picture of him. I've got the picture at home actually, and the picture we had because when we won the double in '98, and we had all the trophies there, and we had the charity shield and everything. We're doing the photo shoot before the start of the season.
Yeah,
I just had this. I saw the trophies and I went, oh god! And I knew I retired in 2002, and in '98 I thought I'm not going to have too many years left.
Yeah,
I want a picture of the back four with the three trophies were there. Yeah. So how often we might get beat next year and lose it, and we did. And so I thought, right. So everyone was milling around, and I went to the photographer. I said, "Can you take a picture of the back four with the?" But I was obviously a little bit conscious that Martin was there as well, and Boldy was kind of
right.
So it was like, "How am I going to do this?" So it's. Everyone was milling into the dressing room to sort of go and get changed and then go home, and we're on the pitch at Highbury. So it was perfect setting. So I was like, right, lads. So I went round and sort of got it going. I want a picture. Just wait till Martin goes down and then we'll get a quick picture. So we got the trophies. He wandered down. I've got one of the lads. I said, take him down the dressing room. Got him out of the way, bless him. It wouldn't have looked right with the picture would have been wrong if there'd been five of us there.
Yeah.
So he went down the thing, so the photography got to be quick, one snap, done. So we got the trophies, we all went on our haunches, and I've got the picture at home, it's an amazing picture. But as we've done that, you know, flipping parlours like, so Ray sees us and he goes running down the tunnel. He goes, Martin, the back four having a picture. They want you out. So Martin comes running out. By that time, it snapped. We all walked off. But he come out and he was like that. He was like, so, you know, and he kind of, did they do it? Yeah. Did they not do it? So he can never come to my house because he'll see the picture on the side.
Well, he's blown up as well on the side.
He would have killed us as well. I'm going to find out now, isn't he?
Well, look, you know, we talk about it, and it is renowned of being the most famous back four in English football. But what made it so formidable? Why was you so good?
George Graham, that, you know, it all boils down to his vision of how he wanted to for a team to play. hand-picking, I say hand-picking, going out and trying to find some talent in the lower leagues, because he wanted to change the philosophy at Arsenal. We'd got a little bit soft. He got players in there that he wasn't too keen about. And the ironic thing about it was he was called the stroller, you know, as a player.
I've George, heard that. Yeah. Well, he was a bit of a... attacking sort of
and he'd wonder, you know, he wouldn't be tracking back, he wouldn't be defending, he was kind of like that sort of strolling around the pitch, good player, but the complete opposite of how he tried to build a team and the base that he wanted to do it was Don Howard, a lot of influence,
brilliant
Don Howard was a brilliant coach, and the Arsenal way for him was to build a base on a goalkeeper and a back four. So without George going out and picking, you know, he picked Nigel first, got him, seen the hunger. And it was all about hunger, desire, you know. Hunger, desire. It had to have some ability, obviously. But it was more about what was in there than what was in your feet. And so if he could mould a four to be better than four individuals, then that was it. And the amount of work we'd done was ridiculous. When I look back on it, I go, God, it was so boring. Training. I mean, you'd have seen us, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that. Was that... I mean, there's obviously a form of talent that was needed, but it seemed so telepathic at times, but was that literally just hours and hours of drill? Because you watch it from the sideline, like step up, the arms go up.
But the thing is with it, we played a way that enabled us to not move out of positions because George was all... And I'll never forget the first time I signed, came down to Highbury, it was a Tuesday, we're in the gym... And in the JBC gym bit, we were doing it was February, so it was frozen pitches and all that lot. So we were in the gym and we had a little five-a-side and da-da-da, and then we played a little bit of pattern of play. And I was a fullback, attacking fullback. That's the vision I had of myself. I wasn't particularly brilliant at defending, but I would get forward. And that's how I got spotted, because I used to score five or six goals a season.
Yeah.
I had sort of blonde hair. You could see me on a pitch. You know, I was quite quick. So I took the eye a little bit, but I didn't really know how to defend. And when I first played in that training session on a Tuesday, every time I went to close someone down, and Dave Rocastle was playing on my side, and every time I went to close someone down, he kept saying, in! He kept saying, in! And I was like, why does he keep shouting in? Yeah. What does that mean? Oh, we show inside here. And I said, I didn't know what that meant. Right. Show inside, what do you mean? Well, when the winger's coming towards you, don't show him down the line, show him inside. And that's the complete opposite. Because I was quick, I wanted him down the line, slide tackle, a bit like Wan-Bissaka, big slide tackle, never get beat, that type of thing. And George is like, if you get beat, the first thing he said to me, if you get beat down the outside, I'll fine you a week's wages.
Really?
I was like, what do you mean? And he went, when the ball, Alan Smith closes the fullback down, he shows inside. If he gets beat, then Dave Rocastle goes to the next one, shows inside, so your strength. So you make the pitch really narrow when you haven't got it, and then when you've got it, you expand.
Yeah.
It's like, so he and Pat Rice, Stuart Houston, it's all in the head, inside. So that's the exact opposite from a defender's point of view that I was taught.
Mm.
So I was now running on the outside. Cole, you're the winger going down there. I would come and stand here.
Yeah.
And so show you in there. So the centre-half comes up, then you go, I've got to go again. And then Nigel would press you in from this side and you'd end up coming down the middle where all your strength is. We'd win the ball, go like that. So if you went down the outside, the first... It's like a coaching session now. Yeah. Not that I'm a coach, but this bit I do know. Yeah. So if you beat me down the outside and I'm the centre-half here... Yeah. Where am I going now? As a centre-half, you beat the full-back and go there. I'm turning round and I'm going back to my own goal.
Yeah.
And he said, I want my two centre-halves to be showing my goalkeeper their shirt numbers all of the time. Mm. So they never, ever turn and go back to the goal, because then the cross comes in, that's where you score goals.
Yeah.
So always squeezing them in and pushing them out. And that was a lesson that I never forgot, and it was that's the basis of how we defended.
Yeah.
And so everyone goes, oh, you're brilliant offside trap. We didn't play offsides. We never played offsides. Yeah. We just held a line and let the stupid thick centre-forwards and midfield players run offside, because they're so keen. We just go, show inside, pressure on the ball, and if a forward makes a run, we just hold our line. You never saw us run up.
No.
You saw us stand there and go, stupid, he's offside. And that's what we did.
So you talk there about centre-halves. Obviously, you had, at the heart of that, defence. Yeah. Tony Adams, captain. What was it like playing alongside him? Because you're still there about...
What, drunk or sober?
Well, both sides then, really.
Well, he was going into that dressing room the first morning was probably the scariest thing I've ever done in my football career, because I'd come from Stoke and I signed on a Tuesday morning and I walked in, we were training at Highbury, as I said, and as I walked in the dressing room, David O'Leary came towards me and he goes, "Welcome aboard." David O'Leary. He was like,
yeah.
I was like, oh my God. Tony Adams was standing there and I knew about Tony just from looking at, you know, games and thinking, I'm going to the Tony Adams, he's a kid and he's a captain, he must be. And he just walked towards me. Still really, Tony was always really sort of young-faced and kind of looked like a kid in a man's body, if you like.
Yeah.
And he was just like loud, you know, in your face. And it was like scary as anything, because I was thinking, God, he's played a million games already. Yeah. And he's a kid. Kenny Sansom came up. So it was really scary. And if he'd said to me, you can leave now and go back to Stoke, I would have given you as much money as I had to leave, because I was so scared. And I was like, right, so I'm going to have to play with these people. So you'd start understanding characters, and straight away, Tony, you would straight away go England captain.
Wow.
And because of his presence. And he was very much into his, you know, and he won't have a go at me for saying, but he was very much into his drinking.
Yeah.
Lifestyle, even though we didn't know it was as bad as it was.
But that was a culture back then as well.
Yes, it was a drinking culture. And so, you know, the week after I signed, we went to, George Graham went, oh, we're going to Marbella next week. And I was like, what for? And he went, oh, just a little break, you know, winter training. I was like, wow, that's cool, isn't it? Marbella, I've never been there. Go to Marbella, and I was like, sitting in this bar, looking at them all going, this is Arsenal Football Club. They are just smashing it up.
Yeah,
from a drinking point of view.
Yeah.
George would come in and say, right, we're training tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. And the lads would go, yes. And I said, well, we've got to train tomorrow, so why are we... No, it was 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, if he'd have said 7 o'clock in the morning, it, you know, we'd still be coming in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, whoa, this is... And I'm not a massive drinker. Tried to hold my own in the first couple of nights, and it was a very bad mistake.
So do you think that culture was just as important as the talent? That got you points? Because I always think, you might be the same, that team spirit that you get in a dressing room, whether it's going to be you going out with the lads or, you know, socialising, that gets you just as many points, or not just as many, but it'll get you points along the way. Was that just the same
I honestly think, and if you take the alcohol out of it, I think, and that's part of the bonding thing was back then. That's why Martin didn't really fit in, because Martin didn't drink. So when he was at Arsenal, the lads would go, right, going for a drink tonight, we'll go in here. You'd go, oh, better go, because I want to be with the lads.
Yeah, yeah,
I want to be one of the lads. So you'd have a few beers. Martin would like, I'll have a water or something. And the lads used to go, what's up with him?
Yeah.
Something wrong with him, because he wasn't drinking. I mean, how warped is that?
Mm.
But in those days, it was kind of like part of our togetherness. And the nights going out in Marbella and all that lot, and you get to see the other side of a player when he's relaxing or whatever. Tony was the opposite. We didn't really know. We knew he was the last one. He wasn't actually the last. He'd go somewhere else, or you'd end up going out and he would come in a lot later than anyone, and the next morning you'd think, wow, we didn't drink that much, did we?
Yeah.
Well, he'd been drinking a lot more, at another place that we didn't go to. So from that, I never forget, we used to, and I tell this story, and he always says, well, was that right? And I went, you asked Baldy and Nigel, but we'd go out on a Tuesday on the Tuesday club, and everyone thinks, oh, you just go out every Tuesday and get smacked. No, we went out once a month.
Yeah.
If there was no midweek game, it wasn't like it was a regular thing.
Yeah.
It was for Tony, but we didn't know at the time. And we'd go out on a Tuesday, and we'd go to TGI Fridays or something and have a few beers and a bit of lunch, and then sort of 7-8 o'clock I'd be like, we've been there since one, I'm going home, wife and kids at home, and I'd train in a couple of days. Next day was Wednesday, I'd be playing golf, so day off, so we'd do that. I'd come in Thursday morning and a taxi would pull up as I'm getting out of my car, and Tony would be in the back of the taxi, and the taxi driver would say, take him in, and he'd been out all day on the Wednesday, so we'd be like, wow, he's had a big night out. So we'd then go into training. Tony, the gaffer would see him and go, get in, you. We'd have Tottenham on the Saturday. He'd train an hour on the Friday, hardly anything. Mm. Play on the Saturday. Me, Baldy and Nigel would be sweeping up all his mistakes, and he'd make the odd good tackle and the crowd would go, yeah. And we'd be like, I look at Baldy and I go, geez, this is hard work looking after him on the pitch on the Saturday. Yeah. 2 minutes before the end of the game, the sponsor to go and today's man of the match is Tony Adams. God, how's he done that? You know, he'd get man of the match every week. And that was him playing and drinking. And then when he stopped drinking, he turned into this completely different human being. Yeah. And he's 26 years sober now, yeah, which is an amazing thing.
I was in my first England squad with Tony. He stopped drinking. And similar to you, Leo, I walked onto the coach and it was like probably the most scariest thing, because I'm talking, it was like,
yeah,
it was Shearer,
yeah,
Tony Adams, Paul Ince, like, yeah. I had these posters of them on my wall 3 years before. And now I'm walking, and there's one seat left and it's next to Tony. And I'm thinking, oh, fuck. So I'm like, all right, so, and he pulled this paper out. I'd never seen a paper that big, like the Financial Times or something like that. So now that's tight the coaches are. So I'm sitting there, I'm on the edge of the seat. And he beckoned me over to sit down, just started chatting to me. So he's like, he's a natural captain, isn't he?
Yeah.
He must have recognised. I was like, oh, fuck, where do I sit? So it was nice that he beckoned me over, but I had about 2 inches to sit on the thing because this fucking paper was about 3 metres long. And he's reading it and he's like, he's chatting to me about what's going on in the paper. And I'm going, yeah. I'm thinking, just get me to the training ground, just get my boots on quickly. But he was brilliant.
He's the safest place on the pitch.
Before we move on, one quick story about Tony as well. When I got called over to the first team training, Pat Rice used to run over if they had an injury, and then he'd see him run over and you go, what, one of us is going to get called over. See, he come over, so you're jogging over, you go, right, come and go to the first team now, go over there, bibs are getting hanged out, bib on. Tony goes, so you're the one that they keep talking about. And I went, yeah. He went, don't fuck it up then. The first thing I was like, oh, bloody hell. But you like coming inside with his drinking and it stopping, that was when obviously Arsene Wenger come in, wasn't it? So how was it going from that era when Arsene come in and changed that philosophy for the nutrition, the diet? Did you kind of take to it early, or did it take a bit of time getting used to?
I think I would say this, it was a perfect storm for Arsene to come into based on where we'd been with George, how successful we've been, the demise of George, and you know, and it wasn't a nice way for him to leave. And then there was a bit of a transitional period with Bruce Rioch coming in for a year. And I didn't get Bruce. Bruce didn't get the club, I don't think. You could see it wasn't working. He changed this. It didn't work because he played with three at the back.
Yeah.
So, and he pushed me and Nigel as wing backs. I kept looking at Nigel going, how much running do you have to do? I don't know. I used to run up and down the pitch from box to box and never touch the ball. I'd be against their full back. It's just a really difficult position and a lot of work for not a lot of, you know, I enjoyed defending and then springing into defence. I didn't attack. I didn't want to be an attacker doing the odd bit of defending because that wasn't my game. That's what you do as a wing back. You hardly have to cover the centre half.
The modern day full backs is a different role completely.
I mean, even now with, you know, like Liverpool and those two pushing right, they play really high.
Did the Chelsea game, not like with Reece James and Alonso playing. Yeah. I would say they're doing more of the role that I did as winger in a 4-3-3.
Yeah,
in terms of the flight, it's more attacking than defending, isn't it?
No, absolutely. Yeah. And because you've got those, you know, midfield players are always given, you know, numbers now, always an 8, he's a 10, he's whatever. And it just drives me mental. Yeah. You know, and I hear people talking about it. And you know, all the midfield players I play with and the great ones who would be great now, regardless of eras and all that lot, played everywhere. Roy Keane played everywhere, scored goals, stopped goals.
Yeah.
Patrick Vieira, Petit, they all did midfield, which is in the middle of the park, as you know, doing everything.
So you're talking about George Graham when he was, you know, inside. What did Wenger stick with that, or was
he? Yeah, that's a good point. Because he's proper switched on Arsene. And he's not the best coach I've ever been as a coach. He's not. No, it's the wrong thing to say. He's a brilliant coach, but he doesn't coach like you would imagine a coach to be, like George was. George was a shifter of, you go, this is how we're playing. You're not in the right position. You should do this, this, and this, and move and stop training and go.
Yeah.
Nigel, you should be there now and give you a telling off and give you instructions.
Yeah.
Arsene's not like... Arsene is a he's kind of like more cerebral in as much as he goes, I'm gonna create a pitch like that and I'm going to go, here's the players that I want to play in the team.
Yeah.
Put them on the pitch. There's a pattern of play to a certain extent. We're playing 4-4. He was a 4-4-2 guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to play 4-4-2. But he would never, he never said one word to me or Ashley Cole or anybody about where to go and what to do.
He put just, a lot of trust in you, didn't he?
Yeah, he'd just go and just go and, he said to me, he used to say to me, go and play. And I used to go, what's that mean? what do you mean? He goes, just go and just do what you think's right. Because he trusted.
Yeah.
He came, as I said, perfect storm, because he came and he had a goalkeeper and a back line that could play with their eyes closed. And he was going to come and change us all, and move us all out, because he doesn't like players over 30.
Yeah.
And I was 32 when he came.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he went... He said to me, he goes, I was thinking of, you know, you're not going to be able to play at this level and much longer. And I played 6 years for him. Yeah. I was 38 when I retired.
Yeah.
Wow. And so those 6 years... And he goes, you surprised me, because I was surprised how good a footballer you were. I thought you were just... You'd all hold on to each other like that as a back four, and that'd be it. But because he gave us the freedom to go, now go and play. I mean, I used to get the ball, Coley, and I used to get the ball and I used to go, oh, I don't know who to pass to. There was so many options.
Really?
As opposed to the opposite of, that's of amazing, Nigel when he went to West Ham, going, I don't know what to do because I've got no options. You've just got the ball and I'll go, Patrick would come running to what? I'd get the ball off Martin Keown and I'd open myself up and Ray Parler would go spin in the arc on that ball. Yeah. Dennis had come short and I'd go, oh, Dennis Bergkamp, got to get it to Dennis. And then Thierry Henry had been making an even better run behind him. I'd go, oh, that's one. And then Patrick would come running towards me going, shouting, give us the ball! And I'd be like, oh, God, give it him.
Wow.
So I'd give it him and then he'd get it and the other three would moan at me and I'd go, right, I'll give it to Dennis next time.
Yeah.
It was so easy.
Do you think he took? Sorry, Tilly. Do you think he took that for granted? Like, as his career at Arsenal, he had that base for the first 6-8 years, and you won trophies.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, George had, you know, he coached you to within an inch of your life. Do you reckon? Because he never quite got a solid back four. I know Sol came in, and there was, and he just seamlessly went in. And obviously, Ashley, he'd come through the youth. But do you think after that era, he never really captured that? Was he capable of coaching a back four?
No. I don't think. I don't think he is, and that's why he got lucky as such.
Yeah.
That's the right word, getting us. But having said that, I have to then remind myself that he gave Ash his chance, as in, right, you're... And Ashley, without... And I'm a full-back, I've got an opinion on him, became the best left-back in the world at the time.
Yeah.
When he was at his peak, there was nobody better.
Yeah.
He learned how to play left-back off Tony Adams.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger never said one word to him, just go... This is what you do to be the best left. Because he doesn't know. He doesn't know how to become the best. What he knows is that Tony Adams knows how to coach him. So let Tony coach him.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
I was going to come on to the rivalry of United because, you know, you were so successful during them years, as was United. But how fierce was that rivalry? I mean, when you got to them games, did you feel the tension build from the sort of Monday to the game day?
Yeah. You put pressure on yourself because you know, you read the papers and, you know, you always say don't read the papers, but people do, and you get the sense of what's going on. Sky Sports is all over it, so you can feel it building. But the brilliant thing was that Wenger and Ferguson had this thing going on which was so brilliant for the players because it deflected. Everyone's like, forgot about us, we can train Monday to Friday and the game's on a Saturday. Them two are at it, loggerheads every day in the papers.
Yeah. Who do you think got the better of the mind games there?
Sir Alex could not deal with Arsene to begin with.
Yeah.
Because he had a new way about him, the way he talked, the way he kind of, you know, flippantly just sort of said things. And the mind games between the two of them, because there's no one better than Sir Alex at dropping the right word in the right time to put pressure on someone. Arsene didn't care. So he was like, what? So it didn't work. And then all of a sudden, you could see Sir Alex sort of getting a little bit... I think over time, you would say that I think Wenger kind of got him and then Sir Alex responded and then the end... And they ended up being... They hated each other during the height of it all, but I think they've grown to become, they've done seminars together, they do speeches together. I think they've become really...
Yeah.
Once the pressure's off...
That happens a lot.
And you respect them for who they are, I think. But when you're going at it, the rivalry is so big.
Yeah.
But the players kind of got shielded from that until the game started.
So when it came to the end of Arsene's era and there was that sort of Wenger out campaign, do you think that was ill-judged in comparison to what he'd done with Arsenal, or do you think it was deserved?
No, I think it was a very difficult period of time, and I was working the media, and I love him to bits. You know, I've got so much respect for him, and I love everything he's done, but I think he's, you know, if you sit down and he was privately now and had a chat with him, he'd probably agree with you that maybe when they won the FA Cup against Hull, that was a good time to go.
Yeah.
Because he was just starting. But he's so, his intelligence and how worldly he is kind of got dampened down by his love of the club and wanting not to go out when it was kind of on the down. Yeah. He just won the FA Cup. Yeah, but, you know, he was all about the league and it was all about competing at that real top level. And the FA Cup's a lovely thing to have, but it's not what you judge by. You judge by how you finish in the Premier League, as far as he's concerned. He always said that. And George said the same thing. They all say, it's the league. Obviously, that's changed a little bit now with Pep, because he's like, Champions League.
Yeah.
He definitely, I think, would have said, I should have gone earlier. And it was hard for us, you know, talking in the media, because I had to say, I think he should have gone earlier.
Yeah.
Saying that to someone you respect so much. Mm. Oh, so you want him to be sacked?
Mm.
You know, do you have to say it like that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I never call for anybody to be sacked, but...
So look, let's go on to current Arsenal. They had a bad...
How long have you got?
They had a bad start to the season. They defending-wise, awful. Yeah. Injuries. Climb up the table now. What's your thoughts on the Arteta appointment and how it's going with him now?
I was always cautious about him because of his experience, even though working under such a brilliant coach in Pep has obviously put him in good stead in lots of ways. But managing a club, and I talk as if I've been a manager, I'm not. I would imagine managing, and I know the managing day-to-day aspects of running a football club, because you can see you're in it, and when you're playing and you can see how much stuff's going on and the stuff that they're doing on an hourly basis that nobody sees at home, we know because we see it. We see the manager kind of going in his office with his head buzzing and he's in there for all afternoon, and they don't see that at home. You just see him turn up on a Saturday, get beat and go, you shouldn't be out, you're rubbish.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit cautious. I know he's a really good coach. You know, the feedback I've got from people at the club say he's coaching, he's training, he's brilliant. They love all that. And so players will only learn from that. And I think the management side of when things are not going well is the thing he's learning. You know, the plan B and all of that lot when his way of playing. Because it's so difficult to get his ideas over so quickly in this modern era where if you lose three games on the trot like they did and they were bottom of the league, everyone's going, get him out. You know, it's like... Because you've got... Not only you've got to carry on working, you've now got the added pressure of people going, you're rubbish, get out. So you've got that to deal with. It's hard enough to deal with, we've lost three on the trot, how are we going to win three on the trot?
Yeah.
You've also got people going, you're rubbish. So you've got added pressures. So you have to keep that bubble with the players and that trust. And I think he's really good with his players, how he doesn't throw any under the bus, and he's very strong in that way. So it's a project. I'm obviously a lot happier than I was, and you're seeing things now start to develop, but I am very cautious when I go, oh, they're back. When media wants instant,
of course,
they're going to win the league, they're going to be top six, they're going to be top four, they're going to do this, but I'm always a bit more cautious.
You mentioned trust there. Do you think it was right for the board to stick with him? Because there was a point where he was probably on a knife edge, wasn't he?
What do you think of Edu as well in that role, sporting director? You played with Edu.
Yeah. Brilliant player, lovely guy.
Yeah.
Came from, you know, South American football where... I was like, right, I don't know whether he knows, you know, it's going to take him a while to get to know the system and the people that you have to deal with not just agents, but the people within other clubs. He didn't know any of them. So building those relationships, you'll know that he needs to know his equivalent at a club and have a relationship. That doesn't come overnight. So when he's picking the phone up and going, oh, you know, what about this player? What about this player? And rather than it just being agents doing that, he needs that connection. So it'll take a while for that to build. So, you know, I think that his relationship now with Arteta and how the club and Vinay and how the and Josh Kroenke and all of that lot is getting better. Yeah. We're seeing improvements. Yeah. We're seeing better. But if you lose four games on the trot, everyone's going, right, everybody out again, change it all. So you're always results-based. And that's why this game now, being a manager nowadays, is probably the most difficult it's ever been, because you don't get time.
When you talk about recruitment, one of them has been Aaron Ramsdale, probably just seen save of the season. I mean, would he be tipped for England number one?
I've already texted Gareth and said, get him in.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want Jordan Pickford ringing me up now. It's all about opinions. And you know, I did two Arsenal games recently, and it's different, especially with goalkeepers for me, because they're not on camera very often unless they're doing something. So when I'm doing commentary or radio or something like that and I've got a bit of downtime, I'm always looking off the ball just to see what's going on. You don't see that on the TV if you're watching the game. And I hadn't seen an awful lot of him live, and I was watching him. He's so on it.
Is he?
He's so on the game. And his distribution, you see him ping a ball on the telly and you go, oh, he's pinged a ball to there. When you see it in real life, in real time, and you see the gaps he's knocked it in and how accurate he is with his pass, I mean, he can kick a ball better than I can. Well, I've had a new knee, so I might be able to take him now. But his distribution, I've been superbly impressed with him. And Dave Seaman, obviously my best mate, he's going in at the moment and doing some work with the young goalkeepers at Arsenal. He's been invited in to look at the kids, and he's been there a few times now, and he's had chats with him, and he said, really impressive character. And he said he's been watching some of his training, and he said, obviously Dave's going back to an era when they used to stand there with a cap on and just stand there and not move about. He said some of his ladder work and his feet work, he said he can't even see his feet, they're just a blur. And he said,
goalkeepers are a different breed.
Oh, imagine Dave doing that. No disrespect, he was a brilliant goalie, but he said the actual footwork and stuff they're doing in training, he's like widened his eyes. So I think he's a hugely impressive character.
Well, someone else that's impressive at the moment, Emile Smith Rowe, scored 4 and 2 assists in the last 7 games. I mean, how well
he's on the ball, Dicko, honestly. He stepped into this
There's an altar cue behind me.
I mean, how well was he done, and how highly? I mean, it's hard to put pressure. I mean, you know about pressure coming through and it being at a young age, but it's hard not to talk about him, isn't it? I mean,
crumbled when that pressure was on. Could you just explain?
I mean, explain to us. I mean, first of all, what it's like to come through young at a big club, profile with pressure on you, and to deliver at the same time as well.
But the thing is, the difference with me in my journey was the pressure came before I'd even kicked a ball. It was strange, and it's a different era because it was news. It was pre-press, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With Emil, like, I think what's helped him is there's an abundance of talent all over the country. So we can't just go, oh, you know, Rooney's coming through now. Let's all pin our hopes on him, or someone else is coming through. There's so many. Foden, he just fell into that bracket. Foden, Grealish, Maddison, Sancho, Hudson-Odoi. And he's like, take your pick of all of them. I think he's incredible. I think he travels with the ball as good as anyone in the league.
Yeah. Where do you think his best position is?
I like him off the left of a front three, or as a 10. Yeah. I think one of them two. But the thing is, Dicko, when I was playing, that was the thing that was labelled at me. What position do you play in? Well, I played throughout my career. I played left of a 4, centre of a 4, left, right of a 4, left of a front three, right of a front. I played all over the place. But now that's seen as a strength. And I think Smith Rowe's one of them players.
Yeah.
Like all of them. Hudson-Odoi can play everywhere. Sancho can. Grealish can. He can play anywhere.
Yeah.
And nowadays, because the tactics so fluid in the movement attacking, I think it's just you have to be able to do that. You can't just be a one-trick
pony. Do you think the way that coaching is now, that these lads are getting that experience of playing into, because I'm a lot older than you, but when I was, you know, it was like, what are you? Are you the fullback?
Yeah.
That was it. You know, and I played fullback.
Yeah.
And the midfield players, you're playing two, you're central midfield or you're a winger. So you were. I think the game now, the way that the coaches are kind of moving around, and certainly Pep and Pep stands out more than anyone of being able to go, just go and play there. You know? And that must help as a kid.
Being in the academy for that year at Chelsea opened my eyes into how good tactically. I remember doing a session with the 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds, and they, the rotations they were doing, and they understood, you know, like all the buzzwords that we think they're buzzwords, 4 and 8 or 6. But you tell them, and it works. Like, they go, bang, right, I'm a 4 now. So then they're getting the ball on the half turn, and then an 8, and then they're box to box.
What would they say if you said to them, you're an 8, a 10, a 4, and a 6? What would they do then?
They just got it.
Yeah.
Then they wouldn't know what to do. Then they'd have to get DVDs of the 80s to watch us how to play midfield. But no, I think Smith Rowe, I love the kid. I think he's different class. And big pressure on him, CD, because I think he's becoming the focal point of that team, the sort of, you know, and that's hard to take as a youngster, because he's right, just going, he just, at the moment, he's going out and playing. But I reckon within 2 months, it may be even now it's happening, the Arsenal punters are looking at him to make the difference when things are going wrong.
Yeah.
That's when the pressure's going to really hit him, when he becomes the icon of the club. Yeah. At the moment, they could still look to Aubameyang or one of the big names.
Yeah.
But sooner or later...
It's changing, though. I mean, Saka was getting that label about him being, you know, you've got to carry the team, and he took a lot. Mm. But he did brilliantly well to go through that period of last season where everyone was going. And then Smith Rowe got in because of injuries, and he was probably not ready. And then all of a sudden, he played in the team, and everyone went, wow.
Yeah.
And Arteta went, oh, well, stumbled across something here a little bit, so keep him in.
Yeah,
but I think managing him is his next, is Arteta's next task. As you quite rightly said,
you speak about focal point. Emil Smith Rowe, he is the focal point for this week's Coral Odds. So for this Arsenal's match this Sunday against Watford, he is 150-1 to score a hat trick against Watford.
Decent, very good.
Great
odds. Mason Mount, attacking midfielder, scored one last week. So,
Or if you're the pessimist and you might like this one, Dicko, you can have 7-1. You're 7-1 if you think it'd be 1-0 to the Arsenal.
Oh, right.
He loves that
scoreline.
1-0 to the Arsenal.
I get royalties every time that song is on the radio.
You had plenty of them, didn't you? Right, let's move it on. Premier League. Listen, points dropped on the weekend. Liverpool dropped points. Man City dropped points. Who are you tipping for the title? We're going straight into it.
You want me number one?
Oh, you're number one.
I don't think I can pick it right now. But I'm a City fan, born and bred.
Yeah.
Obviously, Arsenal taking over, but and they're not going to win it. So,
just quickly, one word answer. When they played each other, Arsenal, Man City.
Arsenal.
Or now. Oh, you win Arsenal to win?
Every day.
Right, okay.
Every day of the week.
Back on it. Who's winning the league?
That's more than one word.
Yeah.
Liverpool look awesome at the moment. I can't rule Chelsea out, but I'm going to go Man City.
He can't back. He wants to back Chelsea. That's what he wants.
I can't.
But he can't. As an Arsenal,
even
man.
If they were like 20
win the league.
Points,
I'm throwing it out there now. Chelsea will win the league.
Yeah,
mate. I just they're so strong, Dick. I've watched them every game. They're not even conceding goals, and you know this man knows about how important the defence is to win a title, and they are the strongest defence by a mile.
I can't argue.
You're a City fan.
Yeah.
Big game this weekend, the Manchester derby.
Yeah.
City versus United. Where do you think that's going to swing?
Well, obviously you got away with it again last night, United. I think City, Ollie's in that position now where he's had a little resurgence with the change of system, and he'll have to do that again at the weekend. Varane's got an injury, so will he be okay? It's touch and go, but I think City will have more than enough to beat him. But it's United can win every single game they play in, because they've got people that can score goals, and it could all click. So that could happen at any point.
Yeah.
But if you actually said, well, how they play, you know, they're conceding goals, the midfield doesn't excite anybody, and they've got them up front, and logic would say that they'll get beat against the big teams because of how open they are. So I think City will beat them quite easily.
Well, Coral odds on that game for the Manchester derby. If you think Manchester United will win 3-0 and Ronaldo will score first, Coral will give you odds of 160-1.
Not enough.
Coral.
Not enough.
It's like Christmas for Coral at the moment.
I don't think that's too bad. Ronaldo, he's in...
To win 3-0.
To win 3-0, Ronaldo to score first.
Right, OK.
No, not for you?
Not for me, that one.
There might be some that want it.
Somebody will have that.
Right, moving on. We're going to play the Coral Football Super Series game. I'm going to ask you both four simple questions about West Ham-Liverpool this Sunday. quick-fire questions. Here we go. Who will win the match?
Draw.
Is it West Ham?
It's at West Ham.
Sorry. It's West Ham-Liverpool. It says West Ham first, so...
Yeah. Draw.
City. Draw. West Ham, good form.
Liverpool.
Who will score first?
Liverpool.
Who will score... A goal scorer?
Salah.
Salah for Liverpool?
Antonio.
This one is... Do we ever get any stats off this one? How many corners?
Both teams.
How many corners in the game?
How many corners in the game? I'm going to go 9.
Yes.
11.
You always say 11.
You always say it.
Has he got
have
one,
got
right,
one
yet?
Right yet? I must have got one right.
How many players will get carded, yellow or red cards?
West Ham,
Liverpool? Could be 5.
4.
5 and 4. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. People at home, remember, you can play along. Head over to coral.co.uk. Answer questions correctly to win cash prizes, but please gamble responsibly. Next up, what really happened? So, Lee, we're going to take you back to a moment in your past.
A terrible
moment.
And we
want to know all about it. So, please tell us the day you found out Lee Dixon was going to be one of the figures on the Emirates Stadium.
I'm very proud of what I've achieved and the medals and all that lot, but that's the one, that's the number one for me.
Really?
And I played a lot of games for Arsenal, and being in that list that you mentioned at the start of the programme is awesome.
Wow.
Winning the league, winning the FA Cup, all that stuff. But when that went up, and in fact, I get a little bit goosebumpy now when I think about, there's only 32 up there, I think there is. 32 players out of Arsenal's history are on that mural.
Yeah.
So they might bring me down next week and change it up, but to get up there is just... I can't even put words to it. It's like... I look at it sometimes and go... Because it's the back of me, you only see my shirt.
Mm.
I almost want me to turn around just to make sure it's my face. You know, it's one of that. Can I just turn him around? So, is that me?
Are you saying just... that because I thought, like, you're being probably a bit modest? But are you trying to say you don't deserve to be up there? Because listen, you've won. You're the fourth, you know, in the list of appearances. I mean, you fully deserve to have that accolade.
But I'm not. If you came in my house, you wouldn't know it was my house. As in, there's nothing really on the wall. And when I joked about the picture, that isn't on the wall. It's in the loft somewhere, but there's a little aching thing in every ex-footballer's chest that goes, oh, can I just play one more game? You know, can I just feel that feeling again? Yeah. And I get that when I see that on the thing. I get the enormity of living out everybody's dreams. Because, I mean, how lucky were we to do that? It's just incredible. And as I get older, I feel that more. I feel lucky to have done it. And one of my kids said to me, Josh said to me, a few years ago now, I've been retired 19 years now.
Wow.
I mean, how mad is that?
Wow.
And it was about after 10 years or something, there was something on Sky and they showed an old game and he was in the house. Because they didn't really, they weren't really into football because when I've retired 2002, so they were kind of, you know, they weren't old enough when I was playing to be really in it as kids. So, and Josh walked past the telly and I cleared one off the line or something and he went, looked at me and he went, you were quite good, weren't you? And it just sort of hit home that he saw me as his dad and da-da-da. Yeah. But when I go to the Emirates and I see that, I almost look at it and go, it's not me.
Mm.
But it reminds me, I go, and then I get the feeling of, I did. And I don't allow myself, I don't know why, really, I don't allow myself to not enjoy it, because I did, but I can't be bothered with it all, with people coming up going, oh, you're a legend, you're all... I allow it in, but it doesn't doesn't really resonate with me because I just every single. This is probably why I lasted so long and why I kept my performances up is because every single day that I played and every training session, and I remember it now because it was a thing in me all the time, I kept expecting someone to come in at any moment. Only kidding, come on. even to my last day when I played with Tony Adams in my last game I played with Tony, and I tell this story a lot, the ball went over the top and Tony just got out of position. I think we were playing Everton or something, and I ran back, I sweeped up and helped him out, rolled it back to the keeper and ran up the pitch. And as I ran up the pitch, it was our last game we played together, as I ran up the pitch, he looked at me and he went, "Dicko," and I went, "What?" He goes, "You're one hell of a fullback, do you know that?"
Oh, that's amazing.
And I went, it literally hit me like a brick. And I went, Tony Adams had just said that to me. And he was my last guy. I said, "You could have said it 10 years ago." You know, it took you all that time to say that.
You might have been like Cafu if you said it 10 years before.
Well, look, it's been brilliant to chat, and we can just see there about you getting the sort of emotion that you got. And for me, that figure symbolises the career that you had. And I'm sure I speak for many, many Arsenal fans as well.
Not many Tottenham ones, but
will say that you're a legend of the game as well. So, look, thanks ever so much for coming on. Last time I see you, you had a knee going out at 90 degree angle.
Yeah.
You was bobbing up and down like a sniper's nightmare, as they say.
Got but a new one now.
Looking well now.
I reckon I could chase him now.
You won't be hard, mate.
On the golf course, golf is going well?
Yeah, golf's going brilliant. New knee, no pain. Good. New lease with life, mullet, the lot.
Well,
what replacement?
Full knee replacement. Last November.
He's got another 20 yards on his drive, apparently.
Yeah. Tell you what, I'm launching it as well at the moment.
Well, I'm a golfer. This man is an avid golfer. We'll get out.
Yes,
so, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure coming on. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Remember, you can find us on the Joe YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcast. You have been listening to All to Play For podcast, brought to you by Joe and Coral. Thanks ever so much. We'll see you on the next one.
You've been listening to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral.